Chapter 21. The case of the stolen cell phone had fascinated the inmates at Trumbull for the past month. Mr. T. Bone, a wiry street kid from Miami serving 20 for drugs, had taken original possession of the phone by means that were still unclear. Cell phones were strictly prohibited at Trumbull, and the method by which he had got one had created more rumors than T. Carl's sex life. The few who'd actually seen it had described it, not in court, but around the camp, as being no larger than a stopwatch. Mr. T-Bone had been seen lurking in the shadows, hunched at the waist, chin to his chest, back to the world, mumbling into the phone. No doubt he was still directing street operations in Miami. Then it disappeared. Mr. T-Bone let it be known that he might kill whoever took it, and when the threats of violence didn't work, he offered a reward of $1,000 in cash. Suspicion soon fell upon another young drug dealer, Zorro, from a section of Atlanta just as rough as Mr. T-Bone's. A killing seemed likely, so the guards in the suits up front intervened and convinced the two that they'd be shipped away if things got out of hand. Violence was not tolerated at Trumbull. The punishment was a trip to a medium security pen with inmates who understood violence. Someone told Mr. T-Bone about the weekly dockets the brethren held, and in due course he found T. Carl and filed suit. He wanted his phone back, plus $1 million in punitive damages. When it was first set for trial, an assistant warden appeared in the cafeteria to observe the proceedings, and the matter was quickly postponed by the brethren. The same thing happened just before the second trial. Allegations of who did or did not have possession of an outlawed cell phone could not be heard by anyone in administration. The guards who watched the weekly shows wouldn't repeat a word. Justice Spicer finally convinced a prison counselor that the boys had a private matter to reconcile without interference from the front.
"We're trying to settle a little matter," he whispered, "and we need to do it in private."
The request worked its way upward, and at the third trial date, the cafeteria was packed with spectators, most of whom were hoping to see bloodshed. The only prison official in the room was a solitary guard sitting in the back, half asleep. Neither of the litigants was a stranger to courtrooms, so it was no surprise that Mr. T-Bone and Zorro acted as their own attorneys. Justice Beach spent most of the first hour trying to keep the language out of the gutter. He finally gave up. Wild accusations spewed forth from the plaintiff, charges that couldn't have been proved without the aid of 1,000 FBI agents. The denials were just as loud and preposterous from the defense. Mr. T-Bone scored heavy blows with two affidavits, signed by inmates whose names were revealed only to the brethren, which contained eyewitness accounts of seeing Zorro trying to hide while talking on a tiny phone. Zorro's angry response described the affidavits in language the brethren had never before encountered.